Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey.
All right, welcome in, everybody. A Wild West Guns and Gold Monday just getting underway here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Did Dari Noka make a cameo in that open?
He was excited about Jalen Ramsey's answer, and I hope Hacker was listening.
Wow. Well, I mean, Hacker is kind of our inside guy, our connection to Dari Noka. If we want to know what Dari Noka's thinking, what he's up to, what he had for lunch, or what he plans to have for lunch, Hacker's going to have that info for us today. By the way, Hacker's dropped a bunch of weight. You realize that in the last 2 weeks?
That's great. I haven't seen him lately because he's been obviously on the road, you know, reporting from SEC Media Days. I'm looking forward to seeing the progress.
Well, maybe you have seen him and you just didn't realize it because he's so skinny these days.
That's a possibility.
You look at him and you're like, that can't be Hacker.
But so now, means he must have possibly cut out the sriracha from his diet.
I don't know. Is sriracha fattening? I mean, like...
You'd assume so.
Is it? I don't know. I'm not going to assume so. Isn't some like cayenne, isn't that good for weight loss, like cayenne pepper?
I guess if it makes you sweat, it would kind of, I don't know. That's interesting. We'll have to ask him himself.
I don't know. He may not have any idea. He's on some plan, whatever the plan Buscelli did that lost a bunch of weight.
Buscelli's lost a lot of weight, too.
Right. Apparently. Well, that's the one that Hacker's doing now. And I've officially started my new quest to slim down as of today. Today. See, this is my third bottle of water today, Tyler. I'm just warning you now. Usually I'm very... even-keeled, mild-mannered. Wouldn't you agree with that? Never really fly off the rails.
I'd say that's a good way to characterize you. Absolutely.
Most people would agree with that. If anybody around here is calm and doesn't fly off the handle, it would be Mike Dempsey. There's no question about that. I'm just warning you that the incidence of losing my mind may increase as I regulate my caffeine intake, okay? Usually I get my caffeine with a heap and helping of sugar, right? I probably drink 8 to 12 Pepsis a day. Truly, a day. Okay? Not good. I know that. But they're so freaking delicious. Okay? So, and they get me going. I don't drink coffee. It gets me going in the morning. Of course, I drink them all day long. Right? And I end up staying up way too late. I'll probably get more sleep now, to be honest with you. But a few years back, I was 43 years old. Maybe, gosh, I might have been 42 when I started. About 5 years ago. And I wanted to lose 50 pounds in 50 days leading into the NFL season, and I'm going to do that once again. That's my new goal. I'm sure that's a healthy way to approach weight loss, but I'm going to do it, and I've actually got 5 days grace period because it's 55 days, you realize, until the first game of the season for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So the next 5 days you can pick out? And then
No. I'm going to build. Are you kidding me? I'm going to get ahead
Start
of the
right
game.
Right now.
Oh, yeah, I'm starting right now. I picked out yesterday, okay? I had I cleaned out the fridge, all the good junk that was left, drank all the soda in the house that I could get my hands on, all that stuff, and because I wanted to weigh in this morning and be as fat as possible.
Absolutely.
Right? And so I have a good starting point. I'm actually 20 pounds lighter now than I was 5 years ago when I started, and I eventually along the way lost 87.5 pounds.
Wow.
Okay? The problem is I gained 67
right.
of those.
You're
back.
One of those guys who loses it and gains it back real fast.
I can.
You fluctuate.
I can. All right. I've proven that I have that ability over the years. I will try not to do that. The thing was, I lost 50 pounds by opening day 5 years ago, and then I kept going all through the season.
Bad
I was able
season,
to lose weight.
Right.
And so when I finally stopped, I was in the 220s, which for me, come on, that's like high school weight for me, freshman year of college, something like that. So I'm under 300 pounds, which is nice. I got that going for me. So I don't have that quick 20 might not come off as quick as it did the first time, but I am dedicated to getting it off and getting it done. Maybe 50 here before you know it.
If you want a fast way to lose some weight, you could download the new Pokemon Go app and go out and start hunting.
How does it get characterized if you walk off a cliff? Does that count as losing
weight?
You'd
probably be an idiot.
Yeah.
That's happened to two people, apparently, in California.
Then you're dead.
Together.
You don't
same
have to
group.
Worry about it. By the way, Duval Doomed did tweet me the graph. It was a CNN graph of the heat index. Okay, he says when it's 90 degrees outside, okay, here it is. 90 degrees and the humidity is like 85%, the heat index is 117. That seems extremely high. That seems like it would boil your brain a little bit. So watch out for the heat dome coming up. And
so damn hot.
I'm gonna take some before pictures, but I'm not gonna post them until I have some midway pictures to compare them to, Tyler.
Now, have you seen the Uncle Chaps onion diet?
The onion diet?
Uncle Chaps' trademark onion diet.
You eat nothing but onions?
It's just a straight onion diet, and if you've seen the before and after pictures, it's incredible. You should go on his Twitter and check it out.
And did he actually believe he went on the onion diet?
No, there's no such thing.
There is a grapefruit diet, right, where that's pretty much all you eat, something like that. I was going to drink a bunch of water, man, and exercise and not drink the soda and the junk food. We'll see where that gets me. How about that? Try to have a little moderation in my life. Sure, 50 pounds in 50 days. That seems like I'm moderating. All right, question of the day, Tyler Devitt, since I know you were wondering, is one we've been holding on to for a little while. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day is this, and it's one that anyone who's ever attended a Jaguar game can participate in. What is your favorite memory from your first Jaguar game, the first Jaguars game you ever attended? Doesn't have to be the inaugural game. Doesn't have to be the inaugural season. Whatever the first Jag game you attended, could have been last season, for all I know. I don't know. Tell us what your favorite memory. Hopefully it was a win. But if you went to your first game in the last several years, chances are it wasn't a win. And hopefully, for the first timers going this year, they'll get off to a better start. But share your favorite memory from your first Jaguar game that you ever attended. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Tyler. Of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page is up and running as well. 641-1010, the phone number. It's also the text line, which is driven by Duval Ford. A lot of interesting stories out there. Nice profile on the Jaguar passing game that Doug Farrar of Sports Illustrated wrote on his way out the door as he went over to work at Bleacher Report. His final piece for SI is up at SI.com. You can check that out. And also, NFL.com is having their writers, and a bunch of them, probably close to 20 of them, vote on the top three players at every position or every position group in the NFL. And one Jaguar cracked the top three in somebody's polling. They're about halfway through the positions right now. We'll get into that a little bit as we go along today as well. John Osier from Jaguars.com scheduled to join us. We hope you do as well. It's a Monday brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. The Ozone, Johnny O, will be joining us here momentarily. I've been told he's en route. En route? He's coming.
Is it en route?
En route?
En route?
Root route? I think it's potato, potato, as far as that goes. So not sure, but he's on his way. How about that? That'll work, and he'll join us here momentarily. The Jags have announced a new partnership with Nickelodeon as they will team up for the annual scrimmage at Everbank, which is, man, it's going to be here before you know it, right? I mean, it really is.
It's probably, less than a month away, right?
It's like 2 weeks from Friday.
Wow. That came fast.
I know. It just once it hits, it really does hit quickly. And this, I'm telling you, the weight loss countdown for me will help me keep track of everything going on. And I started to calculate. I wanted to give myself a little breathing room. All right, 50 pounds, 50 days. And then I started thinking, all right, well, that next Sunday, this upcoming Sunday, will be 49 days, exactly 7 weeks from the first game of the NFL season. The college season will be underway. And, you know, we'll be right back in the whole rhythm of football, dominating our lives on a day-to-day basis, at least on this program. That's how we go. But Nickelodeon is teaming up with the Jags for a celebration of the third annual, quote, Road to Worldwide Day of Play campaign. All right, just note the Nickelodeon. You probably need a little bit of a less wordy descriptor of what you're trying to do here. Road to Worldwide Day of Play. All right. Anyway, they're going to come, and what would you expect Nickelodeon to do? Set up some slime stations?
They got to slime somebody.
They're going to slime somebody or many somebodies, right? Or give you the opportunity to be slimed. That will be happening there. Let's see. There will be a Nickelodeon-themed games, including a super slime obstacle course, Nick Bowling, a slime booth, and costume characters and more. I don't know who their costume characters are, but the kids probably do. That's kind of the point of it. So the Jags is trying to make it a little more family-friendly and just give you another kind of entertainment bonus for attending the scrimmage this year, which, as I said, less than 3 weeks away already.
Jaguars.com/family night. Free ticket there. You got to register. It's completely free. Jaguars.com/family night. 2 weeks away, like you said, and it's completely free. Bring the family.
And people will wonder why they do that. Well,
Friday, August 5th.
Right, August 5th. They're trying to track who goes to these events and what events are popular and what they can do to, you know, offer more of the things that are getting people excited and those kind of things. So, you know, again, like Tyler said, Jaguars.com/family night to register, and you'll be all set on that score. 641-1010 if you want to get in today, both on the text line and on the phone lines. Text line driven by Duval Ford. Somebody asked me what diet I'm doing. I'm not doing any diet. I'm just not drinking soda. I'm not eating junk food. I'm going to try not to eat snacks in between. If I do snack, I'm just going to have a little tiny handful of almonds. And almonds are not bad for you when you're trying to lose weight, Tyler, but you can't eat the whole can.
No.
I do that.
That defeats the purpose.
It does defeat the purpose.
You can still have your dandy sandwiches, though.
You can have your apps in moderation. Everything in moderation. John Osier's here. He knows nothing about moderation. He is just hair on fire, 365. How are you?
You're losing weight, huh?
I'm starting
50
today.
50 and 50.
50 and 50.
All right, well.
I gave myself 5 bonus days to play with.
Nothing like setting yourself
maybe
a reasonable goal.
Something like that. I've done it before. Yeah. I can drop when you're a big boy.
True, yeah.
The first 20, they'll be gone in a week. Truly, the first 20 will be gone in a week, and then the other ones are the actual work.
Yeah, in 2001, when I first went up to Indy, I think I lost about 25 and about 30. You know, if you're heavy and you sort of know it,
sure,
for yourself, and I just change your habits and, you know, I work out and.
I'm heavy and I know it, John. Yeah. And the last time we did this was like 5 years ago.
Well, for you, I mean, for what you want to be.
All I know is I'm too big to horseback ride.
Well,
I'm too big to jump out of a plane. All these are like activities.
Those are the reasons I don't do those things too.
Well, yes. I wouldn't be doing them, but I don't like being restricted from doing them if I wanted to.
You'd like to know you could.
Let's put it that way. How's your weekend? Everything good?
Yeah. Just getting ready to get this thing started.
What's changing for you now? I mean, are you in the next couple of weeks? Are you just still in the mode of pumping out ozones and are you starting to stockpile some articles that'll roll out?
Not really quite yet. I'm going up to see my son's at an internship in Delaware, so we're going up Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to see him, and then once we get back Sunday night, starting next week, it's time to get started.
Right,
players. And, we'll have coverage on Jaguars.com. We'll be doing, but there's really not players in yet. So we're still in mode of, okay, let's get ready for the season. Let's plan a little bit.
You got a good week, basically.
Yeah, right around that. And then, by the time next Friday hits, it's all, it's 24/7 nonstop.
Don't say it's all downhill because it's smooth sailing.
No, it's 24/7 nonstop. So.
I mentioned this to Dan Hicken, and you may have seen this. And this is just. Hey, look, opinions don't matter. You can have the opinion that the Jags going 12-4 doesn't make them any more likely than if you have the opinion they're going 6-10 impacts them. Whatever,
right.
But people have them. It's what we discuss in the offseason. And I mentioned it was an article that we got into a little bit last week at ESPN.com where John Clayton was one of them. I think Mike Sando might have been involved. There were 5 writers that were kind of projecting some different categories. And one of them was the question was simply who has the best young roster in the National Football League? And 2 out of the 5 picked Jacksonville as the best young roster in the NFL. Now, you can argue that. And 3 of them picked Seattle. They said, maybe not as young as Jacksonville's roster, but still much younger than the NFL average and much more accomplished. And I'm not going to quibble with that. Just the fact that 40% of those writers felt that it was reasonable to include Jacksonville at the top of the list made me think probably the other guys, had they gone a little bit deeper, probably wouldn't have had to go too far.
Well, it's a unique situation. And, obviously Hearns and A-Rob and Bortles and, some of the guys there are a big part of that. But it's really rare to have a roster where you've got potential elite level talent. I'm going to say talent because we haven't seen him on the field yet at every level of the defense. You've got Fowler, you've got Jack, you've got Ramsey. And so when analyzing a league and when analyzing and trying to pick a team out of 32 to be the best young talent, it makes sense to have Jacksonville up there. Part of the reason it's so unique is you hardly ever get a situation where you've got 3 young guys like that you haven't seen.
Right.
So the sky's still the limit. Now, history in the NFL tells you that out of those 3 guys, probably not every one of them is going to be a Hall of Fame. It doesn't always pan out as great as it might, but the odds are certainly with you when you have that much young talent on that side of the ball that you're going to get a good percentage of productivity out of that potential, if that makes any sense.
Right, so, sure.
You know, it's a very unique situation in that there is a lot of reason for excitement, and at the same time, whenever you talk about the excitement, you have to check yourself because you just haven't seen the guys on the field yet. So it's a very unique situation. I'm not sure it's ever happened.
It's certainly not production.
Right.
It's just potential. That's what it is. Talent. It's raw talent. And some of it is, you know, production. Some of the young guys on offense have already shown themselves to make some moves. And really, and that's the
one. The reason they're so far up there are those three draft picks are so sparkling, I guess, if you will, when you start looking at it.
I think it's that in conjunction, though, you know, you go out and you sign many people's top free agent in the market,
right,
Malik Jackson, right? And you get Tashaun Gibson in,
sure,
you get Prince Amukamara, Chris Ivory. So you had a good haul. And I think the offense opened eyes with Blake Bortles' numbers,
sure,
Allen Robinson's numbers, Allen Hearns' numbers last year. So I think, and that kind of, I think, catches the attention of people. Even writers think in terms of, wow, oh yeah, Allen Robinson, easy to remember. He had 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns, as opposed to, hey, is Brandon Linder one of the best young offensive linemen in the league kind of thing.
And the interesting thing is, even offensively, it's still a lot of unscratched, untapped potential there. You know, it's still what could they be. I mean, we saw explosiveness from the offense. We saw explosiveness from Blake Bortles. And yet, boy, there's so much that, with a few tweaks and a few improvements from that group, it can still get a lot better. Because there were a lot of times last year where it was not an efficient offense. So all these things we're talking about, it's still so much potential and still so much ahead of them, so much room to grow. So that's what the season's about to make.
Yeah, and we've seen specifically with the wide receiver group mentioned in a couple of off-season rankings among the top five at their unit, in their unit, in the National Football League.
Which is incredible because you've got two guys who should contribute to that who haven't even begun to scratch the surface.
Right.
In Rashad
Green and
Marquise
Lee, right.
And I don't know which. I mean, I think one of those two guys is going to very possibly be the most improved player on the offense this year. I'm not sure which one, but I think out of those two guys, I think there's a good chance one of them is. And boy, then you really do have a wide receiver group that's a group and not a duo.
I think it's fascinating. I mentioned this, I think, to Ryan O'Halloran last week when he was in with us. You have a guy who's already proven to be a Pro Bowler, Allen Robinson,
sure,
right? Made the Pro Bowl. You have a guy who's a former Biletnikoff Award winner in Marquise Lee. And then you have the all-time leading receiver at Florida State and Miami.
Right.
All-time, I mean, right, those are not teams that are shy about throwing the football. When you think about it in those terms and you realize that none of those guys have been in the league for more than 2 years, it's
right,
pretty astounding, really, that you've got
right,
that set of circumstances.
They're all, you know, and it speaks to how Dave Caldwell drafts. He likes college production at a big-time level. So it's not surprising that you would have those all-time kind of numbers. He likes guys who have produced on a big stage. So it's there. I mean, the wide receiver position, as good as it was and as much hope as it gave you last year, there is still a potential for a major jump in effectiveness. Perhaps not numbers for A-Rob. I don't know if bigger numbers are that realistic for him.
Right. Yeah. I think most people would bet under on 1,414.
Sure. For the entire group to be more effective and more toward, you know, just more dangerous, I think it can be a better position than it was last year.
John Oger, Jaguars.com, here in studio with us at 1010XL World Headquarters. Phone lines open to you if you'd like to get in, talk Jaguar football at 641-1010. That's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. The question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. What is your favorite memory from the first Jaguars game that you personally ever attended? Share your thoughts there. We'll head to NFL.com next and take a look as their panel is ranking the top three players at every position group in the National Football League. They've made it through six different positions so far, and one Jacksonville Jaguar has gotten mentioned as among the top three at his position. We'll get into that coming up next. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Tyler Devitt here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Barry Sanders.
Hi, this is Corky Rogers.
I'm Josh Scobie, and you're listening to 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Jacksonville Sports Radio.
This is Deontay the Bronze Bomber Wilder, WBC Heavyweight Champion of the World, and you're listening to 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars today at Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Wouldn't be one without Johnny O in studio from Jaguars.com. You want to get on board, 641-1010, both the phone line and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. John, we were mentioning that NFL.com is doing a series of stories on every position in the National Football League where they've got their many writers, and I mean many, writers weighing in. Got Gil Brandt, William McGinnis, Greg Rosenthal, Charlie Casserly, Nate Burleson, Elliot Harrison, on and on and on. There are about 15 to 20 voting on this, maybe even more in some of these. Jamie Dukes, Eric Davis, Brian Baldinger, names you know,
sure.
Some you probably don't. And they're basically just saying, all right, let's set a baseline for the best players in the league at every position. And the one, well, let me tell you the positions they've done already. They've done receiver, cornerback, quarterback, edge rusher, offensive line, and running back. And I wouldn't expect the Jags to show up. Quite frankly, I wouldn't expect them to show up in any category. But Allen Robinson did get a vote. I found it interesting. And he got it from Gil Brandt,
sure.
Kind of the godfather of the NFL draft. You could only vote for the top three players at every
right.
position. That's saying a lot. In today's NFL, with the proliferation of ridiculous wide receiver numbers and talent, Gil Brandt voted Julio Jones as the number one wide receiver in the NFL. A lot of people would say Antonio Brown. I guess he probably feels like the size,
sure.
you know, gives him an added dimension. Antonio Brown was number two, and Allen Robinson was number three. Here's Brandt's a little spiel. He said, Jones, in all probability, will be the first NFL player to reach 2,000 receiving yards in a single season. Brown might be the best route runner and most dependable pass catcher around. The athletic Robinson has size and leaping ability. He gives opponents fits and is just scratching the surface as to how good he can become. It makes sense. He was the one Pro Bowler from this team last year, that he might be the most high-profile
sure.
guy at his position. But still, in a league with, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and you name it, guys just in their own conference, it's pretty good company for any NFL analyst to consider Allen Robinson among the top three.
Well, it is, and you know, I think we both sort of feel the same way. I don't know that I would put A-Rob there yet.
Right.
But
I think he's projecting a little bit, and that's what he said, kind of, you know.
What's interesting is you always look for guys, if you're going to put them on an elite level, you always look for things. Okay, what is it about this guy that the opposition can't defend, can't stop, can't control? And A-Rob does have that in the sense of you saw last year that basically there were situations where when Bortles threw him the ball on that, on the you know, high go win the ball throw that became a real weapon, It was really tough to stop. He emerged as, I don't know if he's the best in the league, but one of the best at that. Well, interesting to see, does that continue to be something that defenses can't stop? Does that become his thing, an unstoppable thing? Because it was really dangerous last year, and they got a lot of production out of it, and he has that ability to do that, that if it becomes his thing the defenses can't stop, then, yeah, he's got a chance to be elite, because he has talked since last season, his goal in the offseason is to improve at a lot of things around that, route running, to become a guy who, you know, Blake knows where he is on every route, the route running ability, the precision, things like that. He is only scratching the surface, but he's shown that he has an unstoppable quality in at least one area of his game, which is what you have to be to eventually be an elite receiver.
I counted it up. There were 21 analysts who voted in this. 18 of them voted Antonio Brown as the best. So Brandt was one who bucked that trend with Julio Jones. But Brown won the polling. You got 3 points for first place, 2 for second, 1 for third. Brown got 60 points, which is pretty high
sure.
when you only have like 63 available. Odell Beckham Jr., who Brandt didn't mention, came in second. Julio Jones came in third. Others who got votes, DeAndre Hopkins, got 7 total points, Dez Bryant, A.J. Green, Brandon Marshall, Jordy Nelson, and then Allen right. Robinson. So
this is a fascinating year for Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns to a slightly lesser degree. You know, Allen Robinson clearly showed last year that he has that ability to be among that group of receivers that when people in Kansas City or Dallas or anybody around the league is talking receivers, to be one of those handful that people mention. He has that ability. He had a year last year that if he stacks another year on top of that like that, then he's going to start being acknowledged as an elite number one type receiver. So it's a different thing for a player when they're going out and people know about you. And people, and defenses now, if they're looking at the Jaguars in the offseason, they're now looking at 15 and saying, okay, what do we do to stop this? I think some of that started happening last year, so he's dealt with it a little bit. But to stack that second year on top of a breakout year is really what solidifies you, which direction in your career you're going. Were you a breakout year guy, or were you a guy who's going to be around and be in that core guy for a long time?
Consistently elite.
Yeah. And I think because of his work ethic, and starting in January after his rookie year when I talked to him for a story, every time I've talked to him, it just really strikes you. There are some guys in the league who get it and some guys who don't. He gets it in terms of what you have to do to continually improve and to reach a level. It can't be just talent. And he's got talent, but he's also, him and Hearns both, and several other guys on this team, know what it takes in the offseason to get where they want to go. So I think he'll move more toward the direction of being a consistently elite, you know, top-level guy. I've seen nothing in him to make me think he won't.
And the beauty of that, not just for him, but for the team as a whole, you can focus all you want on those two guys, and there are more now that can step. You got to pay attention to this. You got to pay attention to a healthy Julius Thomas, an improved running game. You hope, you know, if the line can.
Well, what's intriguing about those two guys? I know we've talked receiver a lot. It is a good thing for the franchise. Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns. You know, I think anybody would say they're probably, when you mention guys on this team, they're probably two of the first five guys you mentioned. And they both exemplify doing it the right way. And if you walk through the facility March 3rd, when nobody really has to be there, you see them at lunch because they've been working out and they're focused all, you know, their heads are always in the right place when they're at the facility. They know how to approach this. For a young team, not every team has second, third year guy, which is what they are. They're year two going into year three, who are exemplary on that front. It sometimes takes a lot longer for a guy to get it on that level.
641-1010, the phone number if you'd like to get in. Let's start this morning by talking to future co-host wannabe Saqib, checking in on Jaguars today. Good morning, Saqib. How are you?
Hey, what's up, man?
What's up?
Hey, I didn't hear you guys at the end of the show because I was at the beach on Friday, so I didn't know if I got enough votes or not, you know. But let me ask Johnny O a question. Do you if we don't make it to the playoffs this year, do you think that it's kind of pretty much over for Gus Bradley, or do you think they're going to give him another year because he got an extension? I'm just kind of curious because I feel like 4 years is plenty of time for him. That's just my personal opinion, is 4 years is enough time. So I'm hoping that we go to the playoffs this year so that way he doesn't get fired.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily playoffs or bust on that level. I mean, I think 8-8, 9-7 in that range, it has to look like it's going in the right direction much, much more than it has in the first 3 years. I think I heard you guys talking about it last week, Mike. I mean, I don't think Shad Khan is sitting there right now saying, if we don't make the playoffs, this thing gets blown up. I just don't get that feeling. Now, it can't look like it's going in the other direction. You know, and so, yeah.
Or not moving forward either. It can't look like it's a status quo.
At the end of the last few seasons, last year a little more than the first, but not enough, people haven't been able to look at this and say, oh my goodness, I see where it's going. I get it. At the end of this year, there has to be that feeling. And yeah, it also has to be coupled with improvement in the record. But I don't think 10-6, I don't think a playoff season, if that doesn't happen, I don't think it's an automatic that you know, the whole coaching staff is gone and they're trying to retool things. I don't think that's Shad's feeling.
That was exactly the question we asked last week. What does Gus need to do to earn a contract extension, basically? In other words, what's the bare minimum that you think?
I don't think last year's contract, he asked about the extension at the end of last season. I don't think that has much play in what happens in the future, if that makes any sense.
I think what that does, it allows your coach to operate not as a lame duck.
Correct.
Right?
And so,
that's usually important.
I would love to give an answer because everybody wants an answer. I've gotten this question in the Ozone a million times. What's it going to take? And when you don't say it's going to take 10-6 and 9-7 or else it's done, that's the easy answer. But it doesn't really work that way when it plays out in reality. So, I think the expectation around the franchise is winning record. It's time to compete for this thing. I think all those things need to happen, but there are other scenarios where if that doesn't happen, then I don't think it'd be blown out.
I think there are scenarios where 7-9 gets him brought back. I really do, I understand that to a lot of Jaguar fans.
But 7-9 has to look
I understand. Right, that's what I'm saying. There's a range of possibilities under 7-9. Depends on injuries, what you're dealing with, and different the way the game's played out. You know, were you competitive in every game, all those things. But at the other end, I think a winning record.
Did you look like a surging team at the end of the year?
Do you look like a team that's really ready to be that 10-win team?
When I was saying it has to look and feel different, you know, in December, if you're sitting looking at this team going, man, Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey and Dante Fowler, this is a coming defense. I get what happened earlier, but boy, this is going. Sometimes you get teams like that look like that, and if it's looking like that in December, then I don't think you're necessarily going to say, well, they weren't this, so let's go change directions. So,
yeah, and keep in mind, I'm not saying 7-9 guarantees him coming back. There are scenarios, however few they may be, where I could see that happening. I think 9-7 or better, he's back regardless of playoffs or not. That's my opinion.
I would be stunned if he's not back with a winning record. Because I do think there, you know, I know there is a faction of people who are anti-Gus. But the build and I don't sense that at all from anybody, Shad Khan on down.
All right, let me get one more in before we break here. Mike at the Beaches has a question. Mike, you're on Jaguars today. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been reading the paper the last couple of weeks where they break down positions for the Jaguars, and they got to the kicker. They kind of glossed over the guy missing 9 extra points, and I was wondering, if he misses an extra point in each preseason game, do you dump him?
I think it would certainly be a issue where they would bring somebody in. I mean, one reason they didn't dump him last year was because they didn't feel like there was somebody better who was a brighter prospect for the future. They just didn't feel like they were going to make an improvement at that position.
Right. I don't think last year was about what they thought he was at that moment. It's what they think his potential is. By the way, just for the record, I'm not saying it's much better. He missed 7 extra points last year. Just to be – because I'm sure there are people listening out there saying, wait a minute, he didn't miss 9 extra points.
Sure.
Regardless, I'm not saying it was good. He was 32 out of 39 on extra points.
But I would say he has to show consistency in the I don't think you can have the – one miss per game.
I agree.
In the preseason and not have it be something that they seriously consider addressing. They stuck with him all last year. So.
Here's the thing. He only missed, Jason Myers, only missed 4 field goal attempts.
Right.
Let's say he made the first one at the end of regulation against Indy, right? And they're a 6-win team. He never then misses the one in overtime, right? So then instead of being 26 out of 30, he'd be 27 out of 29.
Right.
With only 2 misses on field goals all year long with a long of 58. That's pretty good.
When they look at Myers, they see a guy who was really – I mean, you know, and you can't take the extra points out of the equation, obviously, but was really good on field goals and really good on kickoffs. It's just that extra point's such a glaring thing, you can't have that happen again.
If he was 27 to 29, that's 93.1%. That would put Myers as the 4th best kicker accuracy-wise for field goals in the league.
Right. So, I mean, he was already pretty good in that range, but he had the 2 big misses versus Indy, which were glaring.
14th last year at 86%.
So kind of middle of the pack, you know. I guess it's pretty good. Now, kickers these days are just so damn accurate, you know, where you shouldn't – I guess you can't be blown away by 26 out of 30 anymore when you see guys
– It's not blown away, but it's not – I mean, it's – again, it's so hard to defend when they missed 7 extra points.
Right.
That's just such a But on field goals and kickoffs, they really like them. So.
Right. This State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. Coming up, more of your calls as well at 641-1010. John Osier in studio with us here. It's a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, July 18th is the date, and it's brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in history, 1969, Joe Namath agreed to sell interest in his bar named Bachelor's 3. He did it in order to stay in the National Football League. He did it a little over a month after announcing he was going to retire because Pete Rozelle said he either had to sell the bar or be suspended. He said, no, instead, you know what, I'm not going to play at all. Life magazine said at the time that investigators tapped the phone lines at Bachelor's 3 and found, quote, a full squad of hoods was operating in Joe Namath's nightclub. There were 13 of them, including 11 operating in gambling rackets, a bank robber, and another big-time jewel thief. The bar's phones were reportedly used for bookmaking purposes as well. Namath said he knew nothing about it, but Rozelle demanded that Namath sell his interest because of the, quote, unsavory mafia types who frequented the place. Instead, Namath quit the league and then finally in an agreement with Rozelle because he wanted to play, agreed to sell the club on this date in 1969.
I want to kiss you.
Yeah, in 1994, Namath kept drinking, by the way, at his club even after selling that, apparently. In 1994, the New York Jets signed former, at the time, USA soccer goalkeeper Tony Meola as a place kicker. Tony Meola now is the head coach of your Jacksonville Armada. Famous birthdays for this date. Oh, my goodness, what a day for birthdays when it comes to Jacksonville football. Shad Khan, born in 1950, turned 66 years old today. Happy birthday to the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jeff Lagerman, born on this date in 1967. Happy birthday to our frequent co-host of Jaguars Today. He turns 49. Born on this date, the only guy to win a Super Bowl MVP in the city of Jacksonville, Deion Branch, who won it in Super Bowl 39 when the New England Patriots defeated the Philadelphia Eagles here in Jacksonville. He turns 37 years old today. And speaking of frequent co-hosts to this program, born on this date in 1983, Fat Tony, ladies and gentlemen, 33 years young today and celebrating by taking a week away from me. And how can you blame him? This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Check out jamesjmccall.com online for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Former Texans running back Arian Foster is still looking for a new team, and Foster has a workout scheduled for this afternoon down south with Miami Dolphins, and then he will head up to Detroit later on this week to try out for the Lions. Foster turns 30 in August. He tore his Achilles right here in Jacksonville week 4 last season and has not played in a full 16-game season since 2012. Former Detroit Lions running back Jahvid Best has been approved to run the 100 meters for St. Lucia's Olympic track team, a track and field team in Rio. Best has a St. Lucian father who holds dual citizenship, and he registered a personal best of exactly 10.16 seconds in the 100-meter dash on April 2nd. His NFL career ended after two seasons due to concussions. He was the first-round pick of the Lions in 2010 out of Cal. Eagles head coach Doug Peterson says if it was a game week number 2 overall pick in this year's draft, quarterback Carson Wentz wouldn't even be active. Peterson says if we had to play this week, Carson would be down. He'd be the third quarterback. He'd be deactivated. That's probably the direction we're heading. I would think that's the route we're going. Obviously, barring injury, and as you know how the game is, but typically the third quarterback on our roster, whoever that guy is, he is down on game day. It looks like LeSean McCoy will get all the carries to start the season, Mike. Apparently, former Seminole Carlos Williams has a dad bod and then was suspended on Friday for violating the league substance abuse policy on Friday, which was the day after rookie Jonathan Williams was arrested for DUI in Arkansas early last week. And now the Bills are reportedly targeting free agent running back Reggie Bush. Our friend at CBSSports.com, Jason Lockenfor, calls Bush the favorite to land in Buffalo, although Ian Rappaport says that Bush is still weighing his options. He tore his ACL while playing with the Niners last season, but said last month he feels healthy enough and does not think he lost a step. And finally, here in the Honda Drive around the NFL, two Patriots and I guess you could say music-related notes in the Honda Drive around the NFL. Paul McCartney played at Fenway over the weekend and was joined on stage by everyone's favorite party boy, Rob Gronkowski. The audio here isn't great, but the video of Gronk dancing and his dance moves is certainly worth it. But here's a little clip. Check out the video.
Does Gronk know any of the lyrics of that song other than Helter Skelter?
They told him, Gronk, you're going to go on stage and sing Helter Skelter and just repeat that same line over and over again, I'm sure.
I'm sure they did.
One last one here. Country star Luke Bryan was also in the Boston area playing at the Patriots Stadium. Gillette Stadium was apparently told if you somehow fit Free Brady into a song, the crowd will go nuts. So Bryan thought he was very smart and did a Tom Petty remix of Free Fallen.
Twice, you know you're three times greater.
It took him a while to figure out that he was singing that because I didn't hear really any reaction to that.
Yeah, it was okay. Apparently, it's the thing now is you just say, you hold up signs that say Free Brady or scream out Free Brady and New Englanders go nuts.
Yeah, apparently they think he's under some kind of incarceration or something,
right.
Too. I guess free him from his suspension. The courts say no. Cheating Tom is not going to be freed anytime soon. By the way, if they don't have Carson Wentz inactive on game day, and they have to answer the weekly question of why did they waste so much money on the quarterback position, right? I mean, because Sam Bradford and Chase Daniel both got significant contracts to play this year. And I understand you're at the time, you're Philadelphia, you don't know you're going to be in position to move up and get Carson Wentz in the draft. But nonetheless, they're going to be burning a lot of cash at the QB position. I guess it's a position you burn a lot of cash at, but so be it. Not a team that many people expect a whole lot of out of in 2016, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Hey, here we go.
Hey.
When you build around that top two quarterback, it's usually going to be a year or two. So that's probably what it is for Philly.
Right. Well, you know, it's. Do you think it's still that way anymore? You say it's usually a year or two. Is it that way anymore?
I think realistically, it I usually
Winston,
still
Winston, Mariota,
have.
Both on the field, you know, last year, Blake
well,
the
I
year
meant,
before.
I meant until you start seeing contention and results.
Oh, I see. Okay, in terms of the results.
No, not until they
no,
play.
I gotcha.
Right. I mean,
right.
Andrew Luck took him to the playoffs first year, but that's still pretty not the norm.
Right. RG3, Andrew Luck were kind of skewed it with the rookie
right.
seasons. RG3's
I don't think
off.
That will be I don't think people expect that to be the norm.
Although, you know, Russell Wilson, I don't know what was Seattle's record his first season. I mean, he
yeah,
played
that
great.
That wasn't really a build around the quarterback.
I understand.
Scenario.
Right.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a top pick. He was, you know, it
right.
was like more of a ready-made team that he was walking into. Not quite.
Yeah, a little different. So.
To that level, but nevertheless, I mean, you just don't see teams spending top 10 picks anymore and waiting, showing any kind of patience, and maybe they'll have to with a guy coming from North Dakota State.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of smells like what happened here 2 years ago where they really wanted to have Blake sit for as long as possible, and then as long as possible was 2 weeks.
Right.
So
as long as possible was long enough to get one last good look at Chad Haney.
Right, you would anticipate that's probably how it'll play out in Philly. That's usually how it plays out. You usually want to sit your guy, and then you usually can't.
Tyler?
Seattle Seahawks, Russell's rookie year was 11-5.
11-5. What did they come off of? Was that the 7-9 year that they came off of the year before? I'm trying to think if that was the Beastquake year that preceded that directly. Because they won the division, remember, at 7-9,
yeah,
and they beat New Orleans in the playoffs?
Year gap. Year
was
before,
there?
They were 7-9, correct.
They were 7-9.
Right.
Okay.
2011, 7-9, 2012, 11-5.
Okay. Was that – so, yeah. So, when did New Orleans win the Super Bowl? 2010? I think that's right.
2009.
Oh, so the, then they
the
maybe they went 7-9 back-to-back
seasons? Yeah.
The year that Seattle had the Beastquake run by Marshawn, they knocked off New Orleans as the defending champs because they won the division at 7-9. New Orleans is a
right.
wild card and had to go there despite the fact that they're like 11-5 or whatever the case may be. Speaking of 11-5 type records on the text line driven by Duval Ford, this one – directed towards Mr. Osier. Really, John, with the horses Gus has, they, being the Jags, better go 12-4. That rhetoric is so overused, quote, the right direction. As a fan, you guys have been saying that for 10 years, hashtag Antigua, which I'm not sure. Is there a reason I should know hashtag Antigua? Maybe he's in Antigua is where he's texting from.
Hey.
But putting the hashtag aside,
I think there are people who feel that way.
There may be. I think they're in the minority, and they're certainly setting themselves up to be disappointed.
I would think, but
there's no one in the right mind, I don't think, anyway, that thinks 10-6 gets Gus Bradley fired.
Oh, no. I thought you meant that it's reasonable to think they're going to go 12-4. I think that's a little lofty.
Oh, I think it's possible, though. Right. I'm not saying it's reasonable or I expect it or anything like that.
But no, I don't think 10-6 gets anybody fired.
If you really do feel that this roster is as talented as we feel they are, the problem is, will they all stay healthy?
Sure.
And will they all play up to what they're capable of doing? And how quickly will the young guys reach that level? It's doubtful that all that comes together perfectly in 2016.
I don't think you can look at 10-6 as a failure.
Oh, I think 90%+ of Jag fans would not that case.
I would hope not.
We'll take a timeout here, 641-1010 if you want to get in on the other side, both on the text line driven by Duval Ford and the phone lines as well. Johnny O going to hang out for just a little bit longer.
Absolutely.
From Jaguars.com. He's here with us live in studio on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, with Johnny O. John Osier here with us from Jaguars.com. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony's got the week off. Happy birthday to Fat Tony. 33 RPM, 33 years young today.
He's somewhere in his birthday suit.
Guys don't care when people give out their ages, right?
No, it makes him not distinguished and sophisticated.
It's too late now.
That's right.
I mean, I'm just wondering. It wouldn't stop me, John. I'm just curious if you think you would care.
I don't think you'll care.
I don't think he would, right? I don't think he would. Women, it's a different story with women. They're perpetually 29 or whatever the case may be. You know how that all goes. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. ESPN's latest insider story. They've been filling up the website with a lot of good NFL offseason opinion type content, which I appreciate.
Good stuff.
As we've got 2 weeks to go until training camp rolls around. But they did a story on the sneaky strength of every NFL offense. I don't know if it's such a sneaky strength with the Jacksonville Jaguars, but here's what they had to say about the Jags. The Jags were best when Blake Bortles was throwing deep, and he did it a lot. Only Seattle, Cincinnati, and Oakland had a higher rating on deep passes of 16 or more yards past the line of scrimmage, and only Arizona threw deep on a higher percentage of his passes. If you're talking about a national audience, they may not realize how often that ball, how the yards per catch averages of Hearns and Robinson were among the league's best at wide
receiver. The team itself, I think anybody around the team, that was not only the streaky strength, but it was
a consistent
it was the strength
sometimes.
Of the team.
Yes.
I mean, it was the reason their ability to go deep and hit big plays is, when you looked back on last season, was the number one thing that gave people confidence going forward. That was the core of the team last year.
Do you think that is a streaky kind of thing? Is that something that you can, you know, consistently count on, hitting big plays down the field? Certainly, some guys made careers of doing that.
I think it's something that they showed last year that they can do more consistently than is normal. But I don't think that can be all you have in your repertoire, if that makes sense. I mean, it can't be something where that's all you have. And I think they showed that last year because there were times where that's all they had. And I think that was a reason that you had entire halves where they looked inefficient. And then they would come out and hit some big plays. And you're like, okay, here we go. But I think you need to complement the ability to hit the big play with also the ability to have a sustained drive, keep the defense off the field, score on a 10-play drive rather than just a 2-play drive.
Criticism might be too strong a word, but one critique of Blake Bortles in the season he had was from people who look at the team from the outside, said he accumulated a lot of his stats in the fourth quarter when this team was trailing. I think he threw 14 of his touchdowns in the fourth quarter, which is a pretty high percentage of 35 touchdown passes for one particular quarter, and that, you know, teams are defending you differently in those scenarios. When the games were still in the balance, he didn't have that same level of production. Is that an overlooked area in terms of how we're kind of glossing over how strong his development was from year one to year two?
In a way. I mean, I think that's why you can't just look at his stats from last year and say, yes, Blake Bortles is elite. I mean, based on his stats, he was, what, number two in touchdowns and up there in yards. I don't know what the number in yards was, but it was high. So I don't think he's at – I don't think he's the second-best quarterback in the league yet. So I don't think you can just base his performance on stats. On the other hand, if even if you take the 14 touchdowns away, it's 21 touchdowns in the
average of 7 per quarter.
Right. That would still be pretty good.
Right.
I mean, and you can't discount all 14 touchdowns because they were in the fourth quarter because some of them brought them back. Some of them were winning plays. So it's not horrible, but certainly he would tell you, the offensive coordinator would tell you, anybody who's associated on offense would tell you, he needs to be more efficient. It's not all about stats. When we say that he can have a better year and not have the stats that he had last year, that's what we mean. It's that he can be a more efficient player. If he's better in the first three quarters, he may not have to throw as many in the fourth quarter. So I don't think it's necessarily I don't think it's wrong to say the statistic that you pointed out, but it doesn't mean that he didn't make a huge jump last year. He needs to continue to improve. He's not elite yet, but he can be. He took a major step last year, but he must get better in the efficiency areas of the game.
And I do think that when you're judging him from afar, you know, we see him every day. People don't, you know, if you're in Seattle, you don't see his demeanor. You don't see the way he interacts with his teammates. You don't see the way his teammates talk about him.
Right.
That he has that kind of it factor, and which I...
Off the charts on that front.
Right, which I don't think is a small concern when you're a quarterback.
I think it's major.
Right? So you don't see that outside. So I do think people judge him primarily on the numbers.
Sure.
And because you can't judge him on the win-loss record. At least if you do, he's not going to fare well yet.
All right.
And so people look at the raw numbers and are excited about that leap. And then in breaking them down, that's one of the, Achilles heels.
I said many times that, you know, Blake may or may not be elite, may or may not be the guy, but his teammates believe he is.
Absolutely.
And that's important.
And really, John, as you know.
And they believed it from day one.
Exactly. Believed it from the beginning after one, you know, summer with the guy or a very brief amount of time spent around this guy. Here's one on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Please, let's remember we trailed a lot last year. There are many more prevent defenses later in the game than not with 4 exclamation points, which I think came in exactly as I was saying that, as a matter of fact. And that's kind of what we're pointing out. It's a factor. You still have to have the ability.
Sure.
To go out and make plays. You know, there are plenty of guys who would be behind in the fourth quarter who are not going to throw for 4,400 yards
again,
and 35
touchdowns.
Again, the
reason that you say that he's not elite yet is because of these things we're talking about. And it doesn't mean that he's not going to be, but after 2 years, he's working toward that. And last year was a great, great progress. And now I think this year the storyline around Blake Bortles is just as important as it was going into last year. He needs to continue to improve.
Let's see, a couple others on the text line here. One, this roster is too talented. 12-4 is reachable. You're underestimating our rookies. I'm glad Jack Ramsey, Day, and Unique don't think like you. They thinking beast out mode. Look, all players come into the league thinking.
So am I.
Right. That's great. But – you know, I'm not going to sit here. I don't think the point is to be a cheerleader that about the top end of the possibilities, right? Hey, it's possible they go 16-0 because they play 16 games. They could win any given game. Why couldn't they go 16-0? Why are these players settling for 12-4, John? I mean, yes, if everything came together, I think it's capable of doing that. And I would expect players to have that kind of attitude. That doesn't mean I'm going to sit here and think that's the realistic likelihood.
History suggests that out of those four rookies, not all of them are going to be coming in and playing at their maximum NFL potential in week one of their rookie season. And that's just the reality. It even as talented as they are, if you go back, I mean, you just look at Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson's a really good NFL football player right now. His first month of his rookie season, not as good as he is now.
Right.
It just, no matter how good they are, it just takes a little bit of time.
Another one here. The thing that's alarming about Blake is that, yes, some of his touchdowns can be discounted because of garbage stats, but you can't discount any of his interceptions. As you said, he needs to be more efficient. not just with the number of interceptions, but at the timing and the, sure. the place on the field where they occur.
Yeah, it's
and
something that's got to improve.
There's no question about that.
Big Cat Country, Alfie from Big Cat Country, wrote a whole article about how Blake Bortles and the notion that he is getting those garbage time touchdowns. Thought this was interesting. 22 of Bortles' 35 touchdowns were thrown in games where the margin of victory was between 0 and 7 points, with only 5 of those being thrown in games where the margin was 15 or more. So 22 of Bortles' 35 was thrown between the margin of 0 and 7 points down.
Okay, 22 out of 35.
22 out of 35.
Right, correct. I mean, 13 were when they were losing by 8 or more.
Correct.
Right? So, I mean, you know, I don't know why it jumps from 0 to 7 to 15 or more. There's a pretty wide range in between there as well. Whatever. You know what? None of this will matter in 55 days when they line up against Green Bay Packers or 56 days or whatever it is. So a couple others here. Long ball check, fade, add that, and he can be elite. I don't think it's that simple, but
fade's important. He's got to get better at that.
He absolutely does.
That's a play he's got to get better. So you would hope after 2 years that there are things he can improve on. I mean, if you remember, this was a guy who, when they drafted, they knew that he had developing to do. And for him to have developed as much as he has in 2 years is remarkable. I mean, he is on the cusp. He's at the point where if he does a few things, he will be really, really, really good. I don't think they really expected him to be as far along as he is after 2 years right now. I mean, I don't think they expected him to be as far along as he is right now. So it all points up, and he has to do it.
One more here on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, before we break. How do we feel about Fowler? Can we consider him a rookie, at least in the field? You can consider him any way you like. He's a first-year player. It's funny, Tom McManus was in here last week, and Tom basically feels if you've been in the building for 2 days, I think you're no longer a rookie. You know, and I'm kidding. That's an extreme example. But, you know, as Tom will tell you, you play football, you're halfway through your rookie season, you're not a rookie anymore. You've been through it.
Right.
That's his perspective on it. And that's from the perspective of there's no excuses. You have to win, and youth cannot be used as a crutch, okay, in Tom's eyes. And that's fine. And that's how he feels about it. Certainly he's not a rookie.
I think Fowler has a little bit of an edge because he was around it.
No doubt.
You know, there is something to be said when you just – you sort of feel the pace of a season. Okay, now it's week 4, and this is what happens in week 4. You know, but in terms of the adjusting on the field and learning what the pace and the energy of different phases of the season are, yes, he still has to learn that.
Sure, but if all that stuff, the film sessions, the meetings, all that stuff didn't have an impact,
right?
Then why would you do it, right? He's going to be better off than the typical rookie
in terms of his
preparation for the National Football League. Does that mean
and just he's a year
like a
older,
vet? No,
a year more mature. I mean,
I love the fact, John. At least I do, that he just has seemed so healthy right now. I mean, he didn't miss anything. You know, I'm sure he took some rest. He didn't take every rep during the offseason, but he didn't miss any days. Right?
Well,
there were no days that shut him down.
You know, there are many things that contribute to being successful in the NFL, but off the charts talent and that thing that catches your eye, which a lot of the great ones have, he's got. I mean, he has. When you watched him in OTAs and mini camps, it wasn't hard to see why he was the number 3 overall pick.
And when you talk to him, as I know you have many times, there's a guy who believes he's going to be great.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That doesn't guarantee it, but I don't mind that.
Right.
You know, he has high expectations for himself this year.
And all three of those guys have that. I mean, there's a confidence when you've been the best at what you do all your life. There's a confidence that sort of carries that through. And all three of those guys have that. And that doesn't mean it's guaranteed that it plays out on the field, but it gives you a shot.
All right, we'll take a time out here, come back. The fan feedback question of the day, we asked you, what is your favorite memory from the first Jaguars game that you ever attended? We'll look at some of the feedback. You're going to stick it out to the bitter end here, another 10 minutes or so?
Yeah, why not?
All right, John Osier, senior writer from Jaguars.com, it's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Johnny O, and Tyler Devitt here with you. We'll come back, look at the fan feedback spotlight question of the day. Favorite memories from your first Jaguar game that you ever attended. We do that straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, coming up top of the hour, midday chalk coming your way. It's ACC Media Days. That means I know Cowart's going up to Charlotte this week, Tyler. It hasn't started yet because I saw Joe walk in. I think it's later on in the week for the boys. So we might have a full crew today. I think I may have actually seen them all walk into the building this morning. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers to sporting arms, everything in between. Wild West will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns, which John Osier
darn right you can.
Known so well. If he had any gold, he'd be there as soon as the show is over with. Guns4Jax.com, guns, the number 4, JAX.com, or visit Wild West on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor here of Jaguars Today. Irish Jaguar, I've seen this chart before because he's tweeted it out before. He said he's done the math on Blake Bortles' touchdowns, you know, relative to the score at the time of the game. And at the bottom of the chart, he says, if we remove the games against New England and New Orleans, as the Jags were down big early from consideration, here's what the statistics work out to. Problem is, they played those games. I don't know why you would remove those just because they don't fit the model of what you're
Well, I think he was trying to make the point that those were the ones where they were really way down, and you really can't – I mean – they were so far down that it felt uncompetitive, so maybe you throw
correct.
Out Blake's stats there.
So. But he's saying, right, but in taking those out, it makes the overall stat. If you take out the ones where they were down the biggest, well then, yeah, all the other games look like he was throwing them in much more competitive situations, but he threw 4 touchdowns against New Orleans when they were down big
right.
in that game. You know, so...
Yes, they were down big, but I'm looking at the box score here. They were only down 14 points to the Patriots or to the Saints after the first quarter. That's not insurmountable, and only down 10 nothing to the Patriots in Foxborough after one quarter. So it wasn't an insurmountable lead that he was down by.
If I'm reading this chart right, all of his touchdown passes against New Orleans came when the lead was more than 14 points. So
it feels right.
At one point in the game, yes, it was only 14-0.
Right.
Because it was
but they
early.
They had opportunities, but they failed at those early opportunities.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and so the game kind of got out of hand.
Right, exactly.
And whatever. I mean, look, again, you feel like you're trying to – you're getting in, put in a position where you're arguing against Blake Bortles and what he had.
If you take out the touchdowns that he had when they were down, he still had a year that if you looked at it, you would be excited about the potential. You would feel like if he takes the steps we're talking about – that he has a chance to be a really, really good quarterback. That's what you wanted after 2 years.
Few
he did last year what he had to do.
I remember before the season thinking, boy, if he could throw like 28 touchdowns, 28 would have been a club record, 28 and 14, you know, 2-1 ratio. Instead, he exceeded
after the year he had as a rookie.
But
after the year he had as a rookie, I was thinking if he throws 24 and 15.
Right.
I would have.
He exceeded expectations no matter what circumstances.
I would have thought that's a big jump from 11 and 17 the year before.
Yes.
He clearly did that.
I think just people, you know, think that because you point out these things that you're saying that this is A, indicative of what's going to follow, that he's only going to. No. You're trying to give a complete picture.
This is a case where probably the critics and the praisers are right. He showed enormous potential. He's got a chance to be elite, he has that look. And, yeah, he has to cut down the picks. I mean, anybody who criticizes him for the interceptions are dead on. He has to reduce those. He has to get better in areas.
All right. So, let's get to some of the feedback today. Oh, by the way, your first Jaguar game. Did you cover the opener?
Yeah, I was at all of them. My first.
That's right. You were on the beat the first year. What stands out to you from the actual opener, not the preseason, not the Hall of Fame game?
The actual opener, not as much as the preseason game. I remember the Hall of Fame game was interesting because there was such a buildup that
the great rivalry with Carolina.
Yeah, it was covered looking back in a way that you would never cover the first preseason game. I mean, the headlines in our paper were about a loss. I mean, like they lost to Carolina in the first preseason game, and that was the mood. It was like they lost this game. Well. Now when you talk about a preseason game, you hardly mentioned the score. I mean, so that was the fervor around the first. It was every first was such a big deal. That's kind of what I remember about it, was that you were covering it. It was such a big deal, and you were watching football. This thing that you had, as I was a kid growing up, you never thought this would ever happen.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you're looking at it, and the Jacksonville Jaguars are playing an NFL game.
It's actually real.
Wow. I mean, it was surreal. And I think as somebody who had grown up around the whole process of getting a team and had kind of seen that from – that was so striking that you were actually watching this team and it was real.
Todd, what did we get on Twitter today in terms of feedback here?
On Twitter from Matthew Elliott, he says the Monday night game against the Ravens, one of the best defensive performances from the Jags. Another guy said he was from Baltimore and that was his first game as well, and seeing the Jags hold the Ravens to 11 total yards on Monday Night Football was his greatest memory. Christoph, his first game was a good one. He saw the Morton Anderson miss back in 96.
Was that 11 total yards in that game?
I don't know if it's that few, but it was an unbelievable defensive performance. Oh, against a good team.
It was phenomenal, yeah. And it was just one of the most unexpected Jaguar wins, I thought, that we've ever seen. Go ahead.
BCB Couch says the first game was the 95 Jags-Colts game. JMS was extremely loud, and then the Colts ran back the opening kick.
Mm.
BCB Batman says, I was young, but we lost, and I remember my grandmother was cussing in front of me for the first time.
Nice!
Justin McGillicuddy said, watching little man Stewart score 5 touchdowns on the Eagles. Bergen Jack says it was the first preseason game back in 08. The Jags won versus the Falcons, and the optimism in the stadium was real. Black Dog Express went to the Bulls games and the Colts tees, just attending the first game thinking, we have the NFL. Wow. Brian L. Jones says, simple, spending the day and having a beer with my dad. Miss him. And Tyler, the Jacks 16 draft champions is his Twitter name, the first ever preseason game versus the Rams in 95, when the fans were given teal gum. They gave out teal gum in the first game against the Rams.
I did not get the teal gum. Is this right now? Is this the most enthusiasm for the fan base since 2008? That preseason 2008, coming off the playoff,
yeah, I would
victory.
Think. I wasn't here for 2009, or it's easily the most since I've been back in 2011.
I gotta imagine it's I think I'm asking rhetorically. It's got to be the most enthusiasm that there's been. And realistic, not just blind hope. That it'll get done. Josh said in the Jaguars expansion year in 95, he went to the Seattle game. He was 10 years old. His dad took him to his first NFL game, and Joey Galloway went off. Yeah. Yes, he did. He was just unstoppable that day. Seattle won, but still great memories and experience. Hashtag Jaguars today. Matt Tate went to the Steeler playoff game, I guess, in 2007. Fat Steeler fan with a bandana turned around to me and my dad and said, oh, Jaguars fans. I could hear a pin drop. That's after the Steelers scored on the first drive of the game. Ensuing kick taken back to the 2-yard line by Maurice Jones-Drew. Still got caught. My dad tapped the man on the shoulder and said, you dropped a pin right there, sir. Needless to say, the fat man didn't bother us again for the rest of the game. Thanks, Mojo, for that. Scott said, first game I ever went to was when we played the Colts and Scobie hit the 59-yarder for the win. As time expired, best part was Jackson caught it and ran it out to him. Daniel said it was against Pittsburgh in December 2004. I just moved to Jacks earlier that year. I remember the game slowly turned me into a Jaguar fan, and then Steve Muncy was at the original Hall of Fame game in 1995. Don't remember much of the game, however. Desmond Howard's punt return for a TD electrifying.
I like this one, too, on Twitter. Chief Perm said the drunk guy in front of me, he couldn't pronounce Schmengi, and kept singing, throw it to Willie.
Willie Jackson, man. Quite the Jag Gator crossover group back here. The Jag Gators. You saw those kind of bumper stickers and shirts and things like that all the time in the early days as the Jags tried to cultivate their own fan base. Now I think they've done a pretty good job. Speaking of a guy who never became a Jag Gator but was always a lightning rod for discussion, did ESPN said they did not allow Tim Tebow to speak at the Republican National Convention?
That's the headline I saw. I haven't read the story, but that's the headline I saw.
I wonder if he wanted to do it or not. I don't know if we'll know about that. And that kind of bothers me that ESPN wouldn't let him do that.
Well, he posted a video on Facebook saying he was denying the rumor that he was going to speak there.
Right.
But he didn't say I wanted to or did not want to. I don't think he clarified that.
Interesting. And I guess, interesting that they wouldn't let him speak at either convention. Not that he would necessarily want to speak at the Democratic convention, but any of their talent couldn't speak.
As well as the RNC. So both parties as well.
So you're not allowed to have a political opinion if you work for ESPN, I guess.
Apparently not.
Interesting. All right. I don't want to go too far afield with the whole political thing, but it kind of bugs me for some reason, you know? You going to watch it?
You seem a little edgy.
Are you? Do I? I'm actually considering I haven't had any Pepsi today.
Right.
I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm off to a rousing start, John. I've made it for, I don't know, like 4 hours today without drinking soda or eating junk food.
You're through. You're through to the other side.
I've broken past the toughest part right there. All right. That'll pretty much wrap it up for us. What do you have coming up this week? Just more ozone columns as you get ready for training camp?
More ozone. We'll do some... a few preview stories. Won't be anything huge this week, and we'll be ratcheting up next week.
Ratcheting it up.
That's right.
As we like to say. There he goes, John Osier. Follow him on Twitter, at John Osier, and check him out in the digital pages of Jaguars.com. Appreciate you stopping in. Happy birthday again to Fat Tony, Loggeman, and Shad Khan. That's a power trio if you've ever heard of one. That's pretty good right there,
man.
That's a good trio. Tony, enjoy your time off. I'll try to hold down the fort for you. Thanks, everybody, for weighing in on Twitter, the phone lines, the text line, and on Facebook this morning as well. Barry Milligan, longtime broadcaster in the state of Florida, is going to join me in studio tomorrow.
Good.
And we'll catch up with the Bear Facts. I love Barry Milligan.
That'll be good. I love
He's
Bear.
Going stir crazy right now because I think he had some shoulder surgery.
Okay.
And you know he loves his tennis. And he can't play tennis for like 6 months.
Well, that's hard on Barry.
Oh, that is hard on Barry.
Barry covered a lot of Jaguars with me in the 90s.
Barry covered
Just
a lot of everything.
Yeah.
He self-proclaimed at one point king of trash because he would do play-by-play for, you know, like Division III
right.
women's volleyball.
He didn't care.
My man worked Sunshine Network for all it was worth, and he'll join me in studio tomorrow, as we'll have Ryan O'Halloran later in the week. Hopefully catch up with Donovan Darius coming up shortly as well, and other good stuff for you. Thanks to Tyler Devitt for Tyler and Joe Fortunato for John Osier, and for Fat Tony enjoying his vacation, we hope, day one. I'm Mike Dempsey signing off on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Thanks for listening to Jaguars Today, the Midday Chalk, coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.